Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Gene Hickok, Acting Deputy and Undersecretary of the U.S. Department of Education. And joining us in our conversation is Deborah Kammer.
Gene, could you talk a little bit about what it means when a school's been identified as needing improvement under the No Child Left Behind?
Well, the first thing that people need to recognize, and it's an ongoing struggle with us, is it doesn't mean the school is failing. You can have some very, very good schools that need improvement because what the law says is as you test students and get the results from these tests back, students need to be making adequate progress each year toward the goal of every student being at grade level in 12 years. That's what proficiency means, grade level. So if a school has students who are not making adequate progress, and what happens is you disaggregate, hate to use the fancy terms, you disaggregate test scores based on certain socioeconomic variables, race, gender, ethnicity, etc. As those different groups are disaggregated, we've found over time achievement gaps. Let me illustrate it to give you a better example. So I think it would be helpful. A suburban Virginia, Washington, D.C. school district. Great average test scores, okay? Maybe the best in the area, maybe the best in the state. When you disaggregate those test scores by these various variables, you find out that in this district, African-American students are scoring 40 points below the average of all the other students. That's an achievement gap. That means that this school district needs improvement. It doesn't mean it's a bad district. It certainly doesn't mean it's a failing district. It means it has an obligation to every student, and this achievement gap demonstrates that obligation is being met. If you're found to be in need of improvement the first year, then the school has to make public school choice available to students in a school that's not making adequate progress. And taxpayer dollars help to pay for transportation. If that school continues to need improvement over years, then on top of school choice, there should be access to tutoring services paid for with federal dollars. And if it continues over a longer period of time, there should be consequences for the governance of the school, the curriculum, in the end, even closing the school. Now, the point is, that's not something Washington decides. Those are the policies that states have to put together based upon that Washington law. But the goal here isn't sanctions on schools. It's called the No Child Left Behind Law, not the No School Left Behind Law. If the school isn't working, while every effort should be made to turn the school around, in the meantime, opportunities should be given to kids. That's why schools exist, to educate kids. If the school's not doing that, then something has to change.
So what options does a parent have if their child's school has been identified as needing improvement?
Well, the first option they have is to look to other public schools in the district that work. And to allow their child to attend that school and the transportation to be paid for by the district. And then on top of that, to access tutoring services. Now, that's easy to talk about in public policy. That's sometimes very hard to have happen in reality. Often schools are at capacity. Often in some very troubled districts, there are no schools to choose that work. But the goal here really is to create opportunities. And in some places, we have argued if you're in a very rural or remote location where school choice is not really a possibility, then the district ought to create choices within the existing school. Opportunity is what we're looking for, not necessarily public school choice, opportunity and options. And the measure of success should not be how many students move, because our goal here isn't movement. Our goal here is improving schools. And so what we've seen in the first 2 years are parents, they have the option, they study their opportunities, and in some cases they decide to stay with the current school. But the fact that the incentive has been introduced to think about options has created on the part of many parents a greater sense of what they can do to improve their child's school. And that's not a bad thing.
No Child Left Behind requires that children be taught by a well-qualified teacher by 2006. What does this mean?
Well, the most important thing it means, especially in high school, is that teachers know the subjects they teach. Now, that's a common sense proposition. But in far too many places, America's high school math teachers are not math majors. They're not even math minors. And I'm no math scientist, but the fact is you can't teach what you don't know. And one of the reasons we know that our students are not doing well enough is because too many of their teachers are not qualified enough. Through no fault of their own, they got their degrees the way they got their degrees. So the first thing it means is greater emphasis on content. It means that certification, which is a state function, ought to reflect qualifications. In far too many places, a certification to teach is sort of a minimal requirement. It doesn't require a whole lot to get a certificate. And so in far too many places, a certified teacher is not really qualified. So we think certification ought to mean something. It means that we as a nation should encourage states to allow individuals to enter the classroom who come from different walks of life but who are qualified through alternative certifications. I use the story all the time. I'm a PhD in political science. I've been teaching for years. Where I live, Pennsylvania, I'm qualified to teach an 18-year-old college freshman Civics 101 in September. I'm not qualified to teach that same 18-year-old 4 months earlier high school civics. That strikes me as rather silly. It's not an argument that anyone can teach. It's an argument that there's a lot more talent out there that wants to teach that didn't get a teaching certificate in college. Most of all, it means that we value and understand the importance of good teaching. And therefore, this law says it's important that a qualified instructor be in every classroom because we know that the quality of instruction is a primary factor in making sure children learn.
What does the legislation do or include to help teachers?
Well, there's huge new money in terms of teacher preparation and teacher certification and professional development. I think it's about $3 billion increase. And the point is that up until now, America has invested lots of money, most of it local, on professional development and had no idea, one, what they were buying, and two, what difference it made. And so we have an obligation to, I think, to taxpayers to make sure that that investment, we increase it because we're asking more of our teachers, but we also make sure it's used in ways that make a difference. But it's not just professional development. We're looking at the Higher Education Act right now in Congress. And since most teachers go through colleges of education to become teachers, this is the right time to look at whether or not those colleges of education are doing the job they need to do. So it goes beyond No Child Left Behind. And frankly, we think that this is an issue that parents need to know about. The law says that should the teacher your child has not be highly qualified at the start of a school year, that you should be informed about that as a parent. After all, as I said earlier, these are your schools and your teachers. And so it's a way of making sure that parents understand the qualifications of their child's teacher.
Now, training programs and curriculum improvement efforts could be costly for the local school districts and the states. Could you talk about the funding that's been made available by Congress as part of the legislation?
Yeah, it's dramatic increases in the federal taxpayer contribution to public education. If you look at Title I, I don't mean to get too bogged down in details. Title I is the single largest federal education initiative in elementary and secondary. It goes to help underwrite education for our most needy kids. The increase in 2 years under this president is greater than the increase in the previous administration's 8 years. Dramatic increases, 40% just in Title I. Billion-dollar increases in special education. But let's step back for a second and look at it this way. The American taxpayer contributes approximately $480 billion a year. That's a lot of money. Of that, maybe 8% comes from the federal level. It is unrealistic to assume that huge increases at the federal level will ever come close to matching what's already being spent. The issue isn't how much money. The issue is how well it is spent. And while we have record increases and the administration and Congress stand on record to continue that, I don't know. I guess I've never met the school board member yet who said, please, I have enough money. Or the state legislature that said, please, Washington, don't give us any more money. And certainly when I was in Pennsylvania arguing, I was always arguing for more money. But I do think that the time has come to talk about what has been spent, what's being accomplished with that money, too.
You've described education as an investment. Are there areas that one can target to get a higher return on the investment in education?
Well, I think, you know, more money should be spent on curriculum and on classroom activities. It is interesting to note, and I don't know how many of your listeners would know this, but if you look at the budget of a school district, I would argue almost anywhere in this country, 80%, upwards of 80% of the operating budget is tied up in salaries and compensation. It's a very human resource intense business. And I'm not saying that, you know, that's not important. But the way the contracts are written, those dollars are tied up for years and years and years with increases every year. And the amount of room you have for instructional support and other academic related support is very limited. It's really kind of tragic when you think about it. And so for me, I think most investments should begin to focus on those things we know work, get away from soundbite public policy, try to make sure that you look at how you can design curriculum to reflect the needs of individual students. We can do that now through technology. There's no need for a one-size-fits-all approach. And then you need an accountability system that allows you gradually to determine the impact of a dollar. We're far away from that. That's the direction we're moving in. But a good business can do that. A good business can tell you the marginal cost and the marginal benefits of every dollar. Well, education can't do that. And down the road, education must be able to do that.
That's an interesting point. What are the changes we can expect to see in the future as a result of No Child Left Behind? We'll ask Gene Hickok of the Department of Education for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour continues.